D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Geeksters episode 118. We're back. We have Tim with us today. Yay! We had to redo our schedule around just to get things working here, but we're back and we don't want to miss out with Tim. So, hey, Tim, how's it going?
Doing great. As we're recording this, this is Memorial Day, or as my kin called it growing up, Decorating Day, where we'd go out to the cemetery and leave flares. And it made quite an impression on me growing up. And so to me, it'll always be Decorating Day. Although Memorial Day, I suppose, kind of gets at the same thing. So today it's hamburgers and hot dogs, but, you know, I made a big deal about getting the son out there, put the flag up, make sure there's a light on at night, and he patrols that. And so he's a good Cub Scout watching that for us. But yeah, so tonight it's a day off, but, you know, it's a good reason why we have so much freedom to get up. And I know that I have a lot of freedom to get up and to get out of my basement and do this thing. So forever grateful. And but yeah, Memorial Day.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I did not serve. I have a lot of friends who have. I know my father did, and, you know, my grandfather and stuff like that. And so yeah, there's always a special place for both, you know, Veterans Day and Memorial Day for in my heart. And so if you guys love the ones you have with you and stuff like that. So Mitch, how's it going with you?
Well, happy Memorial Day. My son served, and my father was in the service in World War II, although he didn't actually go overseas. And my brother, and happy Memorial Day. And like Tim said, I mean, you know, people lost their lives for what we have today. So happy Memorial Day to all those people that lost their lives and the people that are serving us right now.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you. Well, I want to make sure that people know that, you know, what Geeksters is about. It's a show. We just come on and we just talk about geek stuff, and it could be anything from anything technology related, really. We've kind of covered a gamut sometimes of wireless cameras, Wi-Fi, probably, I suppose, if a toaster has a computer chip in it, at some point we'll talk about it.
Cell phones.
Yeah, you name it, we talk about it. Now, we do stick a lot to computer-related stuff, wireless, home, networking, stuff like that. But, you know, we'll throw anything in there. So if anybody has any questions regarding any of that stuff, definitely send us an email. Shoot that out to us, and We'll talk about it. But, you know, since Tim hasn't been on a while, and actually it hasn't really been that long, it feels like it, because we did miss a show a week because of just scheduling and illness and, you know, life, you know, just life. And then before that, we, Mitch and I did a show. And so it feels like Tim's been gone for a long time, but really he hasn't. Go ahead, Mitch. I'm sorry.
I think it was the only two shows he missed. That was it.
Was it two? I thought it was just one.
I only missed one show, but I think
there was a one. Yeah, there that's true. We didn't do a show.
The show wasn't done at all. So,
yeah, right.
It's been fantastic. it's for the listeners mostly, but it's springtime, and my kids are involved in a lot of sports, and this has been an unusually busy spring, so. Getting a chance to kind of break away a little bit, kind of focus on that's been great. So, but that's all. So, but having a day off and everybody working around that, we were able to make some time here. So, yeah, it does seem like it's been a while, but
it really hasn't.
Not really.
So, but in the computer world, 1 week. A lot can happen in a week.
I mean, in the computer world.
In computer years.
Dog years or something like that?
In computer years.
Yeah, I've missed many updates.
That's right. Many, many fiscal weeks.
Yeah, I think 2 terabytes equals a year.
Yeah, I forgot. I don't know what the conversion is.
I don't know. We'll have to figure that out. If anybody knows that, please let us know. So what's been happening with you guys? Anything new, exciting, fun, dangerous?
Yeah, I'll go first. This ongoing upgrade that I did from a Windows XP machine to a Windows 7. Yeah, had to buy more RAM for the computer. It's got 4 gigs, 320 gig hard drive, Windows 7. But he had all these Windows XP programs that would not work at all in Windows 7. So I said, if you're really attached to these programs, we can put VirtualBox on and install your copy of XP, which we did. And I showed him how to use everything. It was working well. And he was quite satisfied. But he had one of these old printing softwares, where you do the cards, and I forgot the name of it. But it just would not work in Windows 7 at all. But we got it in VirtualBox, started working fine. He had an old copy of Office 2003 that, and he bought 2010, but it just didn't format what he already had, and so we put that one in XP. Excuse me, in XP, and he was really satisfied.
Nice. And those products, yeah. I mean, just curious, but those products wouldn't work in XP mode?
No. Yeah, we tried the compatibility mode, and they haven't been updated. I mean, when it says Windows 95 or 98 or higher, it's probably not going to work on anything. You're getting a message, it wouldn't work in a 64-bit operating system. Now, maybe if we had 32-bit, possibly. And another thing I want to bring up, because you guys have been hearing me talk about it for a long time. My Verizon contract is up Wednesday, oh, yeah. I believe. So I'm eligible for an upgrade.
Hear that, everybody? He's eligible.
Yes. And I was thinking about just switching to Virgin Mobile because I just use my phone so little. But I'm hearing some horror stories about Virgin, their service. They're subsidiary of Sprint, where they use the Sprint towers. So I'm hearing some horror stories, but they just came out with a new phone. You can get the S5, but I'm not paying $600 for a phone. But they have one that just came out, LG Volt. It's got some pretty decent specs, like a quad core, 1.2 gigahertz. And there's some decent reviews I'm seeing online. So I have a question out there. I don't know if anybody's going to get back, but get back to me and let me know if anybody uses some of these prepaid services, especially Virgin Mobile. I mean, is it worth? I mean, I know depending on what area you're at, it's going to play a big part. But I'm supposed to have pretty good coverage where I'm at, which is Hanover, Pennsylvania. But if anybody uses Virgin Mobile, send us an email or a voicemail. Better yet, let me know if how your service is, and it can be any prepaid type of
cell
phone service.
You said that this Verizon Mobile, they're a subsidiary of Sprint.
Yeah,
and the only reason that caught my attention is because we just lately with traveling and work and kids, we started hitting our data cap. I had bumped it up from 10 gigs to 15 gigs. And then what happens on the AT&T network is that once you hit that cap, it's $15 more for one more gig. And so what I ended up doing was, remember my hotspot, my little clear hotspot that I talked about it, a long time ago.
Right.
It was $50 unlimited on the Clear network. Well, the Clear network was then bought by Sprint. And so now I reactivated this hotspot. It's $55 now a month, but it's unlimited, and I get up to 10 computers I can hook up to it. It has its own little DHCP, but it's also on the Sprint network. So while I was thinking, well, I need to do this because, if I'm out in the field a lot, I'm using my phone, and this way I'll just to go ahead and tether it and go that route and kind of hopefully decrease our family's bandwidth, because I am the primary user of all that bandwidth between mapping programs, just downloading applications, researching stuff on my phone out in the field, which is what I need to do. But they moved to Sprint, so I was kind of hoping that I'll have a better experience with them. And I will be taking a trip down into California coming up in the next couple of weeks to deploy a new server. And the biggest thing was that it didn't work in the big area. So I would hit out, my area, I'd head into Portland, it would work fine there, into southern, start in the, if you look at the map of Oregon, really you have Portland up at the top, you've got Salem and Eugene in the middle, and then it's pretty much just a couple you know, 1500, you know, 15,000 people towns along the way. So you're not a huge area. It's not hugely densely populated. So you end up with these dead spots, which there's nothing I can do about that. I understand that. But what was happening is I would go to these places where they would have decent cellular service, but this hotspot wouldn't work because Clear was not available. So I'm hoping that by them buying, being sold to Sprint, essentially, I'm going to benefit from that. But I don't know anything about, the Sprint network.
Right. You will.
Yeah. I guess I'll find out. So you were talking about, prepaid stuff and Nick says, in the chat room, Nick from Foolish IT says, Mitch, check into Page Plus Cellular. They use the Verizon network, so it's pretty decent coverage, at least for me. And you can really use any Verizon phone with that service except for prepaid phones.
Right.
So Page Plus Cellular.
Check them out.
And that doesn't sound familiar for over here in the West Coast, though.
I might have checked into it. You can't get Cricket. You can't get Cricket out here, I don't think. And so we have Boost, which is Sprint too. It's also a subsidiary of Sprint. The one I was interested in was Virgin Mobile's $35 a month with unlimited data, although they do cap you after 2.5 gigs. And 300 minutes of phone service and unlimited texts. You know, on my Verizon plan that I have now that I'm grandfathered in, I get 450 minutes of phone service, unlimited data, which is good, but I average 1.4, which is not much. And I got to pay for texts, which I get around that by using, you know, apps.
Mm-hmm.
And my phone, you know, the minutes on my phone I use, it averages between like 40 and 60 minutes a month. So that
works. How much?
I'm paying like $66 and some change a month because I get 18% off of my employer. So it's another reason why I'll probably stick with them, you know, maybe.
I get
that 18% off. Though if I do upgrade my phone, you know, since I'm grandfathered in, they have no more unlimited data. But what they will do for you, since I was grandfathered in, they will give me pretty much basically the same plan I have now. But I'll get 6 gigabytes of data. Everything else will stay the same, except I get a discount from where I work, 18%. But it won't be on the data if I upgrade to another phone. But that's only going to be it would be like maybe $3 more than I'm paying now. And they have like the LG G2. It's a nice phone. They have that for free on Verizon right now. But they always get you with that $30 activation fee. But
they always get you.
Don't they? I mean, every time you get a new phone, I've never had where they drop the, of course, this would only be my third one. But, you know, the S5 and the HTC One M8, those three phones I'm really, really interested in. So, we'll see. And, you know, I got something from, I think Tim, you're a Comcast customer. I got something in the mail from them a couple of weeks ago. Their Comcast, believe it or not, is partnered with Verizon Cellular. If I buy a phone through Verizon phone through Comcast.
Oh, man.
On these certain amount of dates, between these dates, I get a $200 prepaid Visa card. So that's another thing I might, you know, might be worth doing too. So,
I just hate this. Buy insurance. It's like buying insurance. You gotta shop around. Or it's like trying to buy something from Dell. I mean, you go there and you can navigate. You know, their website is like a choose your adventure book. I mean, you can go through Dell like any one of 17 different ways and end up with the same thing at each end, and they all cost like different price. It's all different price, but yeah. The same thing. It's like buying airline tickets or something. And that's
And then again, if I do get a phone with Verizon upgrade, it would be another two year contract.
Right.
Whereas Virgin Mobile, you know, I can change phones. You're not locked in.
Well, I do know that a lot of cellular providers now are kind of getting away from that 2-year contract because what they want you to do is buy into that anytime. Well, AT&T calls it the anytime upgrade. So I don't have a 2-year contract when I got my Galaxy S4 because what they want me to do is, well, now I'm coming up almost on a year. What they really want me to do is now, oh, wait, the S5's out. So now I should just go buy the S5, you know, and never be, you know, well, I can be free to do that because I'm not locked into any contract. But guess what? There's always a gotcha. So
you still got to pay the phone off.
Well, no, I don't have to pay the phone off. I just have to, you know, they just,
if Verizon has an Edge program. Mm. I think if you pay in like 6 months on it, you can get another phone. But, you know, they're saying it's not a contract. But what if you want to discontinue Verizon? All
yeah.
I guarantee you, you're going to pay the rest of that phone.
Yeah, you can't go away, but you can upgrade really cheap. But it's not a contract. So yeah, it's
anything with that much fine print at the end, it has to be.
That's right. That's right.
It's not a contract. It's just an agreement that between us that you can't do these things. That's a contract.
I think I signed more lines on more pages when I got a cell phone than I did when I bought my house.
Right. 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 I mean, you have kids, and it's like, well, leave in the hospital. Here's your kid. But I mean, you can't get out of the cell phone. You know, the bar out in stores. It's gosh. Can I just take the phone home? You can call me. We can just do it that way. It's just going to take a while. I need to get comfortable.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Why are you wearing your pajamas? Because I know. Because I know.
Well, I'm horrified by how complicated this process is and that now Comcast needs to be involved somehow. I mean, that just, that makes me just want to just get rid of everything and crawl in my basement, lock the door, and never come out.
When just a tin can and a string.
No, not even that. I'm cutting the string.
Tim, are you in there? Go away.
Well, I tell you what, I'm also up as of, oh man, over a month ago. And you know what? I'm just going to tread water. I hate all this crap. And I used to enjoy doing this sort of thing, shopping around, getting the return to screws, getting the best deal, really feeling like I got over. But you know what? I don't have the patience at the time or something. Everything is kind of just going. I tell you what, the other day I actually looked at what we pay, and I wish I hadn't looked at that. It's just awful between the two devices. And you know what? I got the exact same thing you got, Martin, where I got a text, and which that's something I like, that, you know, I got notified, hey, you're at your data limit. And I'm like, So, you know, I'm looking at our history here, and it's like we use this much data, and I actually pay for a little bit more. It's always been adequate. Same thing. It was like I had a week left, and we had just bumped into like our data limit. I'm like, what's that all about? And I thought about it, and you know what? It was, there were a couple weeks where I know that I had used some more, but that I had tethered the kids' tablets to it, and we had done a little bit of extra driving. You know what? I think their tablets, I think that they sit here connected to the Wi-Fi all day. As soon as we get in the car, this tablet's like, ooh, I'm going to start downloading stuff, like in the background. I don't know what it's, updating. I know that my daughter is like, sure, I'll download that 16 gig movie and then like watch 3 minutes. Oh, I don't want this. And I think she's just like is going nuts. And so I don't know. That's actually my deal is that we have plenty of data, but I need to find some way to corral it, that these downloads and whatnot, they need to happen here at the house before we leave. I believe there's some settings, you know, that I can make in the device to kind of prevent that from happening, or encourage it to happen here before we leave, and I'm on my cell data. But then I think there also is some behavioral changes that I need to address. So. But yeah, I had the exact same thing where like $15, for, you know, whatever gig, I think a gig over that. And I think that I got hurt pretty bad this last month, but I thought, well, I could spend the $10 I was going to have to go up 2 gigs or whatever to cover it, but you're stuck with that. And so, I mean, I don't want to commit to that because this was an event. This isn't what I would expect over time. So, I didn't want to pay to bump it up. I'll take the hit because, you know, 2-3 months out, I'll be paying a lot extra for data that I know we won't be using. So,
yeah,
the numbers were exactly the same though that you had said, and that was with Verizon. So it's like the gas. It's like the gas companies. They're all just one big company.
Yep. As soon as one goes up, they all go up.
Just one big company. One big company. You might think that we have to. It's all one town. It all goes through a cable somewhere in Des Moines.
One DSL line. Well, I had to go back a couple, a week or so, and I had a client call me saying, hey, my computer just has this starting up every time. And I thought I'd just, you know, I thought I'd just give you a call because it's been about a week and a half, 2 weeks. And what would start up is the computer would go through its BIOS and then stop. And at the bottom, it says hard drive imminent failure. You know, press F1 to continue.
Yeah.
And she says, so, you know, I just keep hitting F1.
Obviously, and it's not that imminent.
Right. And so really why they called was because it was a Vista machine and it was kind of stuck in a reboot loop. And an update. It would say installing update 3 of 3 and sit, and it would take about 4 or 5 minutes, and then it would just reboot. It would just shut down and reboot. And then do the same thing over and over again. So I said, well, first off, we need to get you a new hard drive because this is a problem. And we need to fix this problem because she says it just doesn't work now. So I went out there, grabbed it, brought it home, turned it on. Sure enough, I could replicate the issue. I went ahead because it had hard drive imminent failure and it wasn't booting, I thought, well, I first cloned it right off the bat. The first thing I did was just quickly clone the hard drive. Ran spin right on it, and the second sector was bad, unrecoverable. That did not fix the issue, though. So I was like, well, okay. So I grabbed the clone image.
How did cloning go with a bad sector?
It cloned fine because I use CloneZilla, so it just says sector by sector, just whatever's there, just do it. I had a feeling it was going to take a bit longer because you can clone with CloneZilla. It has, during the setup process, you can tell it what level to start cloning at, and it'll start, and then the very bottom one, which would be, you know, if I can't do steps 1, 2, and 3, do 4, and the very last one is a bit by bit sector, which is what, I'm gonna digress here for a minute, but which is what CloneZilla will do so you can clone a true cryptid hard drive. Because CloneZilla will try to clone that, realize that it's not a Windows or a Linux partition or something like that, and it just drops all the way back to bit by bit. And it does take a long time to do it, but it will clone a true cryptid hard drive.
Exact copy.
An exact copy, bit by bit. Like I said, it takes a long time.
Ignore the data. It doesn't even care.
It doesn't even care.
Just copying ones and zeros.
Right. And so it was able to clone. No problem. It did take a little bit longer. It took about 4 hours to clone, which, you know, is a 500 gig hard drive. So that's a bit long, but not crazy. I just kind of turned around, left it, and walked away. Put the new hard drive in. It booted up, no issues with. Let me reverse back to that. It did not give me the "your hard drive is going to die" error, because remember that error that you see when that happens, that's from the smart technology, the systems monitoring and resource tools, some of that. So that's actually on the hard drive chip. That's actually on the the hard drive on the board on the hard drive. That's where that information is coming through, and it passes that through to the computer. So that's not something your Windows is seeing yet, because it hasn't booted into Windows yet. So that was gone because I had replaced the hard drive. But then it booted right into update 3 of 3, and then a looping and looping and looping. And I went and I did some research on Vista, and Vista has had this issue for many years on many different applications. Where it will do, if you just Google Vista update 3 of 3 reboot, you're going to see forums all the way back to 2007 regarding this issue. So went ahead and started working with that and trying to figure out what it was. And, tried to get a Vista CD that I could do like a system recovery with, or at least a system, you know, have it do itself. I couldn't find one. Every Vista CD that I burned, it was just, it didn't match, or it mismatched, you know, this or that wrong, or the wrong, operating system, wrong this, or, you know. So I was like, forget it. So I ended up actually using kind of one of the, like a 98 boot CD, somewhere I could actually get into and see the operating system. So I actually think I did a Linux CD. I was able to actually get in and then look at the actual files on the hard drive itself. In Vista, and I believe in 7 as well, there's a file called pending.xml. And I believe correct me if I'm wrong here, that's just an XML file that exists when there is updates pending. So it's kind of just a, it's just text a, file. Yeah, it's a text file. It's a pointer file. Am I incorrect in that?
I mean XML. I guess it can have anything, any kind of information that's put into it.
But it sounds like from some other reading is that it doesn't exist if you don't have any updates. Like if you're not pending any updates, this file doesn't exist. And gotcha. And so what I was able to do was go in there and actually I just renamed it. And it's found in the Windows directory under WinSFSXS. So Windows/WinSXS. And then there's a pending.xml file. I just renamed it to .xml.old. Rebooted the machine, booted right in. Now, it took a little bit longer. Like, I know I could see that it was trying to chug and trying to do some stuff, but it took a little bit longer. And then from there, I was able to do, again, restart the Windows updates. Because I think a combination of the bad sectors, the hard drive failing, you know, because the hard drive was failing, which was one thing, and that's usually... I don't know if that's necessarily sectors as much as it started to make a clicking noise. So I was having bad sectors on the hard drive. I was having, and now granted, this was a fairly old hard drive. I was actually probably having physical issues with the hard drive, and now it wouldn't boot. So I had to I felt like I was working against the clock here before something actually failed and I couldn't get any data back because this was going to be a system that was going to be kind of a chore to reload. It's fairly messy. There's just no organization. We're going to need to fix that. But if it broke, it's going to take a lot of time to kind of get things correct and put things back where they were unorganized so I can make sure that the company could be up and running. So I did do that. We removed the pending XML. It reloaded, did Windows updates, got it all up and running and was able to deliver it back to the user, that next day. I picked it up on a Friday.
Was getting the updates one of the problems before you did
That's what caused it all, or at least this update. But you know, after I updated Vista, it went fine.
Even on a good hard drive, Vista, in my experiences, they're always notorious for broken updates.
Right.
Vista was awful. But there you mentioned them again. Braytech has a real good tutorial.
Yeah.
On fixing Windows updates. It's never not worked for me. So it's always worked for me.
Yeah. Well, I would, this is a really older machine. It's time for an upgrade, but I can't, they're not interested in upgrading yet. Maybe end of the year we talked about it because it's Vista. I mean, Vista's still valid. Vista's still getting updates. So I can't really, you know.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to use.
And so I did talk with them and because they, you know, one of the things that they said was this is really going to be bad if it breaks down because it's their only computer. Now we have them on CrashPlan. So we have them doing, external offsite cloud storage. So the data is safe, but, rebuilding the home would be kind of a pain, but we are able to get it up and running.
Yeah. With the way that Vista hard drives just sit there and grind and grind and grind 24 hours a day. As it's doing its amazing indexing or whatever it's doing, I'm surprised they would have ever heard any hard drive clicking or anything. You know what? I've done that repair many, many, many times, and I think that that's, I don't know, it's necessarily a Vista thing so much as just, you know, the imminent hard drive failure that, you know. An update was applied, it rebooted, it did not successfully reboot, and then it comes back up, and it's like, hey, I was doing something, and then now you're stuck in that boot loop. And I think that, even Googling just, like, Windows updates boot loop, I think will get you to that file. But, I've repaired machines many, many times that way, and... once you kind of hit upon it, that's a very, very easy fix. And it's almost like magic. It's like, wow, I can't believe that was that easy. It does, like you said, a little bit longer to come up as it's trying to figure out what happened to it. But yeah, you'll log in, it'll be happy. It'll start and the updates will go through and kind of figure out where it's at and what updates are still required. But I'm gonna ask you about the Clonezilla. Now, is that, I'm thinking we're using the same version of that. I mean, it's all, there's no real, there's no graphical GUI to it, right? It's all,
It's
menu driven.
Well, it's not text-based, but there is a GUI, but it's very basic.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of, you know, tab, spacebar to select things. There's no, there is a mouse actually. But it's not, it's much easier to do it just with keyboard commands And you can script it out, which is one of the nice things about it. You know, you can I have it on a server here, and it just boots right to it, and I could script it out and put in the IP address of the host server, the server I want to save the images at, you know, credentials. And so you could actually, you know, put that all in this huge long string and of if you wanted to. But there's just so many options and for Clonezilla that that I don't know how to a lot to do with it. And so that's one of the things about Clonezilla is that it almost seems like it's overwhelming because you get so many choices. It's not just a whole bunch of next buttons. But on the other hand, it's pretty powerful. Now, the downside of Clonezilla is that if you take a 250 gig, well, okay, say you clone a 500 gig hard drive, okay, and then but you're only using 80 gigs of that 500 gig hard drive, you can't then take that and put it on a 250 gig hard drive because it sees 500 gigs and it says I can't fit on 250 gigs, even though they're only using 80. You can do so that's a full disk. You can do a partition. A clone, but the problems you run into that is especially if you like Windows 7. If you look at your partitions, Windows 7 makes its own little partition, and then you have the bigger one. So it's not always easy to use in that aspect. There is a way you can force it to go to a smaller one. I haven't had any luck with that. So it's
and that sort of thing is really it's neither here nor there if you have a failing hard drive.
Right.
That's the I'm a huge fan of Clonezilla, and it's not the sort of thing that I would ordinarily like. I think it's like it's pretty crude to look at. It's all text. I think it's like I'm trying to remember. Aren't the colors like it's like a red background or something with a blue text or something hideous? Yeah. I can't remember. But
well, it is. It's based off. They have got the regular version. They have like this other. Alternate version, which I found that works well, but it's based off Ubuntu, so it's purple and white, which is kind of the Ubuntu colors.
All right. I don't even know what the version I'm using was probably recovered in an archaeological dig somewhere. but you know what? It does what I wanted to do, which ordinarily is I can't image it because whatever I'm using in Windows, it hits a speed bump, and it's like whoa. There's a problem here. I can't do this anymore. And it's like, well, I wish you told me that, 20 minutes ago before at least, you started doing this. that's always been the huge thing about the Clonezilla is that I can say, I want you to start. I want you to finish. If you encounter a problem, just go on. Sure. And that's huge. And I really like the sector as it's copying sector because as it's it starts at the beginning, it goes to the end, and the way it was explained to me, and I in my mind, this makes a lot of sense, is that if you have a hard drive that is compromised or it's failing, that when you don't have that armature in there swinging around randomly as it's reading data, it just slowly sweeps like a record player. That's a good thing when you have a hard drive that has potentially imminent failure. I love Clonezilla. It's always done a good job for me. It's free, and it does do a good job though. If you're going the other way, if you are going from like a 250 gig hard drive to a 500, the first time you boot that up, it'll just appear to be a 250 gig hard drive. And you can just go in and resize that permission to that partition to just use the full drive if you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I've always used Acronis. I never tried Clonezilla. I wanted to, but, Acronis, I don't think it's never not worked for me. And, I even went to a slightly smaller drive before and I didn't have any problems. And, I guess the hard drives weren't too bad. I mean, and everything worked fine. Never had any complaints. Not that I've done a ton of them like you guys do, but now I did try a freeware one because I had trouble. I did have trouble cloning a SSD to a regular hard drive.
Oh, okay.
The Acronis, it said it worked, but then it wouldn't boot up. But then I found another program, a freeware, that did work because its SSDs are a little different. The whole structure is different and all. But I can't remember the name of the freeware one I used, which worked. But I've always been a Acronis fan, but I always wanted to try Clonezilla, but never did.
Well, and you know what? I believe firmly, and as I've said it many times, is that I think a lot of these products that we don't have to get into a you know, I'd rather push my Cronus than drive your Clonezilla.
Right, right.
Yeah, there's so many options for all these different things, you know, and what you find, whatever you're using, it's probably the first thing that you found that has worked for you consistently. And it's like, why would I try anything else? This has just always worked for me. And so, that's why we get together here and share all this you know, we do know what options are available out there.
I mean, I still use Netscape, you know, that's the first browser I ever use and I still use it.
Yeah, I'm.
I mean, you could, I suppose.
Along with my Windows 95 operating system.
And AO, and you've got mail.
I still search with Lycos. I mean,
GeoCities.
You know what? That's so sad. I actually clicked the GeoCities link the other day, and it took me to a nothing. That's just so sad.
I like, that was used awful. To have all these places.
That was really awful.
You make these freeware websites.
That was awful when they killed it, and they destroyed it. They destroyed all of it. It all went away. Remember?
Yeah.
I think you had the option to like, back that stuff up, but they just killed it. I mean, all of that GeoCities data they had on the servers probably would fit on like 5 hard drives, you know, that I could just round up in my basement here somewhere. But no, we don't do that. So
yeah, I'm not. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say that it would probably fit on like 3 micro SD cards out of our phones.
Oh yeah,
but no, we're not gonna. It's gone. GeoCities.
I had a client call me a couple weeks ago as well regarding they were using. I can't even remember what the application was. I don't remember if I talked about it here, if I talked about it on one of our Voxer chats regarding they were using a card making application. And Mitch, this may be kind of what you're running into as well. They were using some kind of a card making application. Oh, no. I know what they wanted to do.
Reading cards?
Yeah. What they wanted to do was instead of sending physical cards, they wanted to send out digital cards to their clients. And they said, hey, we'd like to use Smilebox. What do you know about it? And I said, well, everything that I know about Smilebox is that it installs a whole bunch of junk on your computer and a whole bunch of like browser redirects. And it's just nasty. I said, I would not recommend it. I said, I can't recommend the site because I'm their IT guy. And so what would happen is if they installed something like this, then basically I'm just, you know, yeah, go ahead and install, you know, you know, the browser redirects and stuff like that, because I just know that I'm trying to save them time. I'm trying to save me heartache and pain. And they said, okay, what would you recommend? And I gave them, you know, AmericanGreetingCards.com or, you know, a multiple of the other free online card making e-card type stuff. Right. And, have you guys ever used Smilebox before?
I never even heard of it.
Oh.
It just sounds awful.
Yeah. And so go ahead, Mitch, have you used it or heard of it?
No, but just from the title, you can tell that it's not coming on my computer. I'll tell you that right now.
So, smilebox.com, and it says, you know, it's animated and printable designs. You can email, you can post, you can print at home. They have a free service. They have a premium service. And basically, it's an online greeting card maker. And so I said, well, here's the issue you may run into. So I hadn't heard about it. They said, thanks, not a problem. Weeks later, now, I had gone out to work on another issue. And the vice president of the company, who's my primary point of contact for a lot of their admin stuff, says, hey, can you look at my computer? It's doing some funny stuff. Sure. Let me take a look. Browser redirects, toolbar installed. Oh, and Smilebox.
Oh, which is more like Frownbox now.
Right. So let me remove that stuff for you. Remove that. And she goes, yeah, ever since I installed Smilebox after you told me not to, it hasn't been working very well. And I keep getting pop-ups, and not just pop-ups. It's those embedded video. You know what I mean? So like you go to Google and in the middle of the pages, there's an embedded video for, you know, Mucinex or, you know, whatever. And you can't really figure out where the sound's coming from. So cleaned it up. It was actually on 2 computers and they're like, yeah, I don't think we're going to use Smilebox. Okay, good. So if you guys are using Smilebox, I don't know about the paid version, but the free version, you might as well install it. What's the big one out there?
The Conduit.
Yeah, might as well just install that and get over with. So Smilebox, down Frownbox.
Search conduit actually limits your ability to search for things.
Right.
It takes you to wherever it wants you to go. Well, it's ironic. It's a search con. It's awful. It's the worst. It's literally. Yeah,
we had it on a computer at work.
What's that?
A couple weeks ago, I had and yeah, my boss just thinks, you know, just use Malwarebytes, get rid of it. It's done. I said I need to go over it afterwards, and but he never lets me. He said it's fine. You know, I run it for him, clean it up, and he said that I never hear from him. Then I'll email him. How's it running? Fine. That's all I hear. So
fine.
I don't know, but I like to go over it with a fine tooth comb, even after using Malwarebytes.
Oh yeah.
I think I've had to go in a registry and move some of that stuff before from can do it.
It's ADW now. It's the bomb.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, that's the tool of the hour. It's amazing. I've used it. I used it again last week, and I just love it. Love it to death. Love it.
I love it. So
I love it. ADW. Love it. Love it.
What's fantastic. The old? There's an old Saturday Night Live skit where somebody does that. I don't know. We're talking about uninstalling stuff, and I wanted to bring this up. And our sponsor, Nick Shaw, who does, you know, D2 or D7 and a whole bunch of other stuff, D-Uninstaller has been upgraded. The new version of D-Uninstaller is out. It's version 3.1. Now, the new updates, I confirmed this with him, the new updates are for people who have registered the product. So it's kind of the paid version. But I just wanted to bring this up again that so if you have a registered version, you have a new a registered copy, you can upgrade to 3.1, and it does things, and it says that he added a new feature to delete files, directories, and registry keys after automatic uninstalls are performed. And so the automatic uninstalls are done off the free version, or off the paid version, apologize. But have you guys used D-Uninstaller before?
I have not.
I have, and that's actually really, really slick. So you just run it. Yeah, it's a small little application. It's a small executable. It's less than a meg, I believe. It's right about a meg. You just run it on your thumb drive, something like that. So if you have a computer that has, you know, a whole bunch of stuff you need to uninstall, run it, and you can just go through and you can just click a whole bunch of different things and just say go, and it just goes through and it actually it just uninstalls everything right in a row. Just automatically. So it's actually it's really, really cool. It's on my thumb drive and I use it because, you know, there's a lot of times we have to wait for stuff to uninstall, and this will, this will do that stuff. Nick also mentioned that he also added whitelisting. So great thing to do. You can have it on your you can have it, on your stuff. You have your logo, not, Nick's logo. Not that Nick doesn't have a cool logo, but you know, whitelisting and make it a little more personal for your business.
Branding.
Yeah, definitely branding. The more times you get your name out there, the, you know, you be who you are.
That's right.
You don't sell
the laptop, you sell the sizzle.
That's right, the sizzle. The sizzle. The other thing that...
This is kind of like the, like when I use Night Night, it installs things. Like I just set it and go, and come back and it's done. This is the other end of that, where you just... When you uninstall things, you just set it and it goes. You come back and it's done. Is that it? Really? I mean, is that what this does?
Yeah,
it's like
the
anti Night Night.
It is the anti Night Night. Now
I'm just trying to wrap. I don't want to associate the two products. I'm just trying to wrap my mind around this. This is what it does, right? Instead of, you know, like if I'm using the horrible ad remove programs from any version of Windows, including my favorite most recent, that. You uninstall and you have to click this and you click that. It's a process. And then you can uninstall the next one and you have to click that. They ask you, are you sure you want to do this? And it's a horrible, horrible thing if you have to uninstall 3, 4, 5 things. This is what that does, except you just click and tell it start and then it just goes, right? It's done. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Now I just had my hand smacked, you know, virtually. Okay. So whitelisting is not branding. That's not the same. So I apologize for that. So Nick says, branding would be, or whitelisting would be, and he says, for example, you can blacklist toolbar, but whitelist Bing, and it would install everything, it would uninstall every toolbar except for Bing. So that's what the whitelisting is keep this certain program, uninstall everything else. So it's kind of cool because then you can say uninstall every toolbar. Except for, you know, so if you have multiple toolbars, like we've all seen that famous screenshot of all of the toolbars. Oh, but you want maybe you want to keep conduit so you can uninstall everything from conduit toolbar. No.
Wow, this is fantastic. Love it. And you've used this.
I have used it. And it, like I said, it's a small application. It fits, you know, right on a thumb drive. And it works really, really well. Another new news from Nick is that CryptoPrevent version 4.4.1 was released as well. And so this one, it has a new option to block the execution of syskey.exe, as recently being exploited by malware. So he sounds like he's updated it to kind of keep up to date with all of the malware and everything else that the bad guys are doing. So a new version of CryptoPrevent. So if you guys are using CryptoPrevent, I've had it installed on multiple machines. Definitely go update your CryptoPrevent toolkit. Keep that up to date as well. And of course, Nick has D7 and D7.2 now, and he's been on the show a couple times. We've talked with him both. He's been on with Geeksters, and then he's also done some other stuff. But he's a big sponsor of Podnuts, and so definitely support him and his products, because he's just an all around cool guy.
Agreed.
And so we definitely wanted to, you know, we want to make sure that give a shout out to Nick for all of his hard work and everything he does, because he just loves the stuff he does, and it shows in his product. So some sad news that came out, and if you probably haven't heard about this, you want to make sure you do this. Is that if you have an eBay account, eBay was hacked, and you want to make sure you change your password. So eBay says this. This is what from the Hacker News came out with this, and it says eBay revealed that hackers compromised customers' databases, including emails, physical address, encrypted passwords, and dates of birth, in a hacking attempt between late February and early March. But financial information like credit card numbers as well as PayPal information were stored separately and were not compromised. So at least they kept the data separate, you know, but really, what do you need when you go to try to buy something or, authenticate who you are, you know, your name, your address, your date of birth? So I have a feeling we're going to see some, fraudulent, stuff come through this, because it's just, you know, they got a whole bunch of your identity on this. eBay waited 2 weeks to tell anybody about this as well. And the reason they waited 2 weeks is because eBay was running a forensic, right? They were running an investigation.
Because it wasn't a buy it now.
That's right. They waited 2 weeks because there was a bidding. What is it? The minimum hadn't been met yet?
Hack it now.
That's right. Hack it now. Well, what they were trying to do, what they said, is they weren't sure if it was internal or external that caused this. So they were doing a forensic, investigation on its computers to find out the extent of the theft, to find out whether or not to find out what was going on. So they were kind of just running a test internally to see what was going on. You know, we've all, you know, the Target, now eBay, you know, there's been so many of these that have happened where they wait and they wait and they wait and so long. I mean, granted, it's just 2 weeks, but that's 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh, that's forever.
They wait so long because they're trying to do some investigation. And then you have companies who are like, hey, by the way, the other day we got hacked. I want to let you know we got hacked. We're going to reset everybody's password. Now, eBay's forcing everybody to do their password change, but, you know, just come out. It's like when you're a kid, or it's like when you're an adult. You know, if you do something wrong, isn't it easier just to, and it's harder, it's tough. You got to eat a piece of humble pie, but to go to the person and say, I've done this wrong, and be done with it. As opposed to waiting and maybe lying and trying to covering it up.
That's it. I mean, human nature is the cover up. Like, I can still get away with this. I mean, that's just human nature. And so there's some part of that in play. You know what? I mean, they need, like, when something like this happens, I'm thinking they need, there has to be some window where they can figure out what happened when they go public, how they can say this is what happened, and they've already got something in place so it's not continuing to happen or get worse because they're announcing this happened. But if something goes 2 weeks, it's all about damage control and trying to make it go away.
Do you know how many TVs you can buy with my credit card in 2 weeks?
All of them.
That's right. I wonder if they would use your credit. They probably just went to Amazon. They probably went to podnuts.com/Amazon and bought a whole bunch of stuff. Now when I go to Amazon, it brings up links for things that I don't want, suggestions. I'm like, what?
Search conduit. So, well, I mean,
you want to buy search conduit?
Yeah, I mean, so I mean, you said your name, your birthday. I guess the value in was in the value is the quantity of what maybe they might have gotten, but that's not. I mean, as far as like me individually, that's not like hugely private information.
Well,
name,
sure.
Address, birthday. I guess it is a big deal, though. I mean, if they got that from hundreds of thousands of people.
Right. Well, at least they didn't keep, at least the databases were separate. I mean, we've all seen.
What was the nature of the hacking? Was there, to give you an indication what the exploit was or how they got this? Or?
Employee login credentials.
0000. Right. 0000.
Right, right. It says, quote unquote, cyber attacks compromised a small number of employee login credentials, allowing unauthorized access to eBay's corporate network. So
somebody left a laptop somewhere on the bus or the subway. It's what.
Or, you know, they used the password, or they used, you know, and this, you know, and if this is the case, then this really falls back to your network and system administrators. How come they're not in, you know, I would probably put money on it that eBay's running a domain. A Windows domain of some sort. Why aren't there policies in place to have the users change passwords every so often? Why isn't there policies in place then to have, you can set your password policies, you know, set them higher, make, you know, don't allow things like password, don't allow, you know, add a special character, add something, you know, if nothing else, then have a training. You know, maybe they don't have a domain policy, then have training. You know, these are things that we just have to get out as, you know, as me being a systems administrator for schools, as for other companies with a domain, without a domain, as you guys having clients as well. You know, we need to be really reminding our customers that the password is not a great password. You know, they need to, you know, come up with, I tell my clients, you know, come up with a password. Well, what should I use? You choose it. I'm like, I'll choose you a hard one if you want. I know, maybe make it a phrase, you know, it doesn't need to be crazy, you know, with, well,
and that's,
you know,
a hard one doesn't equal complicated.
Exactly.
That's the problem. And very often, in the search for a hard one, people are issued something that's complicated, and that it doesn't have to be the case. It could be a phrase, something that's very natural to say, but if you were to read it, it's not something that would just instantly show up in a rainbow table somewhere. Especially, well, I don't know. I'm gonna get too far off of this, but yeah, hard to crack does not have to mean complicated for the user to use day to day, and that is the biggest failing in security is not working with people, because people. I've seen some amazing policies in place. A guy a couple of months ago, he sent me something, the brand new policy that had been put in place to, you know, passwords had to be changed every so many days. They had to, and it was literally like, I actually felt like I had to get a lawyer to read it, to really explain. It was so complicated. All the requirements, and some of the requirements seemed to contradict other requirements. And it was just like, it's like, I should give up. Can I just scan my eye or something? just scan my eyeball.
Yeah. But you're right, Tim. It complicated does not mean, well, yeah, whatever you said.
Right. It doesn't have to be difficult for the user to actually be difficult to crack,
right? Or, you know, yeah,
because they're humans.
Yeah. So I just, if you haven't changed your eBay password, change it. You know, and what the, you know, the whole big point of this is that what this is going to allow now is, because they know you're an eBay customer, they have your email address, is now you're going to be getting phishing attacks. And that's really what a lot of this is going to come down to, is that just be aware that if you start getting emails from eBay saying, you know, this happened, please click here, give us your information.
Don't do that.
Go to the site and change your password that way. Don't click on that eBay has sent you to change your password.
I don't remember my password.
Right. Well, you know, but if you don't remember your password, then go to the site and click on, I don't remember my password. Don't do that. So if you have friends, if you have families, if you have your neighbor that uses eBay that you know about, remind them to do this well, because they are more than likely going to get an email that says, oh, if you haven't heard in the news, click here. Then they give them their information, including probably a credit card, because they're going to want that for validation, you know, or pseudo-validation. And now all of a sudden, I don't know who bought a TV in New York. It wasn't me. I haven't been to New York in years.
If you're really paranoid, change your password, your name, and your birth date.
There you go.
Oh, that should, that'll take care of it.
Or change your password to 000000. Worked for the government.
It did for all those years.
All those years. One more thing that I came across, and this was actually just recently, and it's actually from the Forbes network, and it says most antivirus software is lousy at detecting advanced malware. And I thought, oh, this looks interesting. And it starts out by pretty much saying, let's link in here real quick. And all of these links, of course, are in the show notes. It starts out saying the duck test has been a long used example for deductive reasoning that essentially boils down to this. If it waddles, quacks, and swims like a duck, it's a duck. It says some might have said that of malicious code or malware that criminals create, distribute, unleash to exploit vulnerabilities. So it says basically, if it looks like it, if it sounds like it, if it works like it, then it must be. And this is it's not a very long article, but it goes down here and it talks a lot about how they actually did a test or Last Line Labs did a test for 365 days. So it's not just these little tests that sometimes we come across of, oh, this is the latest malware because in those last month they've caught this or antivirus. They did a full from May 2013 to May 2014. Must have just ended against 47 vendors. And this is what they have found. On day zero, only 51% of AV scanners detected new malware samples. It took an average of 2 days for at least one AV scanner to detect malware that went undetected on the first day. Detection rates bumped up to 61% after 2 weeks, indicating a common lag for AV signatures. In 1 year, no single AV scanner caught every new malware samples in even one of the test days. After a year, 10% of the scanners did not detect some malware. And the one percentile of malware that is least likely to be detected was, the one percentile of malware least likely to be detected was undetected by the majority of AV scanners for months, and in some cases were never detected. And it goes on to say the 1% of malware, those whistling, skipping mallards that continue to elude the duck test of signature-based detection. This advanced malware can be polymorphic and environmentally aware, lying dormant or changing to adapt it if it senses that it's being watched or quarantined. So really that 1%, you're going to have a hard time with anyways. There's really not that. But what got me was that on day zero, only 5% of the AV scanners detected new malware samples, and that after 2 weeks, 61% it says detection rates bumped up to 61% after 2 weeks, indicating common lag for AV signatures. So we end up getting into this competition of, well, Symantec's better than ABG, and ABG is better than Avast, and Avast, well, now Avast is at the top, and then Malwarebytes, you know, the free version of Microsoft Security Essentials isn't as good. We end up running through all this, but this report is pretty much saying that in a whole year, they tested 47 vendors, and really, they're all the same. Not one of them is any better than the other. While in a short term, on a small scale, sure, they may be. But in the long run,
we're doomed.
There's not a whole lot we can do. You know, after you know, it says detection rates bumped up to 61% after 2 weeks. So really, of all the AV signatures, only 61% of them knew about the virus after 2 weeks. So I just thought this was an interesting article because we've talked about this before regarding, you know, antivirus declining and malware like ransomware and just junkware, is that on the incline? You know, do we need as much antivirus software as much as we need more junkware software and malware software and ransomware software? You know, are we at a tipping point, or have we been at a tipping point where you know, things like, you know, CryptoPrevent is way more popular than something like Symantec antivirus.
All the more than you should use a sandbox when you're running your browser, some type of sandboxing. I don't know. What's the answer? It's scary.
I don't know. I throw it out there and talk to you guys.
Run Linux.
Well, you know, there's a lot of data there to digest, and I'll admit that I didn't get much of it. I mean, I was trying to really process all that. I agree with you that I think the takeaway from that is really what most of us probably know in our gut is that I don't think anyone would necessarily agree that all of the products are the same. I think we do have our favorites for this reason or that. But ultimately, I think we all know that whatever you're using, somebody's gonna get stung somewhere eventually because nothing gets everything all the time. And it's a tennis match. I mean, the ball is volleyed back and forth. At some point, the good guys do have the leg up, and sometimes the bad guys have the leg up. Somebody makes a move, and then the other side responds. And so that's what I got from this article. That hey, here's some numbers that actually kind of show that. So.
Yeah, this paragraph here sums it up really well. It says, Symantec sparked some discussion recently when it said that AV's dead. Kaspersky Labs retorted AV is alive and kicking. But alive or dead, our research data shows that no single AV vendor can detect most malware most of the time.
Symantec said AV is dead?
Yeah, it was a couple weeks ago Symantec Antivirus came out and said that.
Wow.
It says, and what one vendor
they
detects...
Announced their, they announced there's no reason for their product.
Right.
Hey, you know what? I'm thinking that marketing guy isn't there anymore.
Right.
It's Coca-Cola. It kills you. Don't buy it.
Right, right.
Buy Coca-Cola.
It says, and what one vendor detects, another may not. It says, most AV technology is inconsistent and slow, often taking days, weeks, or even months to detect malware and issue a signature against it, at which point it has archived its objective, or it has achieved its objective, and the sender has moved on. It's as if people were fingerprinted before being granted access to the Federal Reserve vault or military weapons arsenal, but the database of criminal fingerprints lagged by months or years, and the criminal's fingerprints changed daily. So, like I said, it's not a very long article, and they actually report back to their test. There's a link in this article that goes back to the test of all of these of listing labs, and they've got some graphics and some charts and stuff like that. And it struck me because I know we had talked about this a couple of times, and you know, and it's hard to keep up. How do you keep up with this stuff? I got a call yesterday from a friend saying, well, what antivirus do you use? What's the best one do you use? And really, there's which one have we not been burned on? That's the one we have a tendency to be used. You know, I've used Microsoft Security Essentials for quite a while. I've used the free version of AVG. I know the one time I get burned on those, I won't be using those anymore. But it's not a matter of when or if, it's a matter of when.
Well, Martin and Tim, what about your clients? They probably had one of those products on before and still
right. I've got a client right now that's using Microsoft McAfee. Excuse me, has been using McAfee for years, and nobody has had any issues with it. It's worked great for them. You know, I've worked in a company one time where they got burned by Symantec, and they said, "Nope, we're not using that anymore," and we went on to something else.
I mean, I've had them where they've had those two or Security Essentials, and they were still
on. Oh yeah, no, there's no way around it, and that's where we come in, and we have to, you know, that's where there's not just, you know, you don't just take the training wheels off your kids' bikes and just let them go. There's training involved, there's education, there's don't run out in the street. So, you know, we don't just throw in a virus on a computer and say go. We throw in a virus on the computer and then we say, okay, now stop searching for conduit, stop installing, you know, this other stuff that comes with this, because you know, we need to educate just as much as that, because it's just proven that we can't, there is not a one fix of throwing antivirus, throwing malware bytes, throwing all this other kind of stuff on there, and then saying, great, you're completely, fully, and 100% totally protected. It's
all about education.
It is all about education.
And ultimately, no matter what you do, eventually the other guy's going to run the red light and hit you.
Exactly.
How many times people ask, well, how did this happen? How did I get this? The stock answer for years has been, you know, I don't charge enough to do the CSI. I charge for the removal. I really don't do much to try and find what it is or where it came from. If you'd like me to pursue that, I can. But ultimately, it's just bad luck. And you know, if you don't have faith in this product, we can look at something else. You know, however, I don't believe that you necessarily did anything to cause this. It's just bad luck. People are usually satisfied with that, but ultimately that's just what it boils down to.
Right.
61% in 2 weeks. I mean, eventually it's just going to happen. So,
yeah. Yeah. So we do have an email that really ties right into this thing. But before we get into that, Tim, I want to see if there was anything any products and stuff you had worked on that you wanted to bring.
Yeah, you know what? Real quickly, there were a couple things that I did want to mention. I had a bunch of things potentially I could talk about. But the main thing was about Windows XP and Microsoft Security Essentials. The situation there is that if you already have Security Essentials installed on your Windows XP machine, you will get a warning that appears to suggest that it's not working. Graphically, it impresses this upon you that there's a big red stripe across the window, right. and it's very shocking. It's, oh my gosh. But if you look at it, it's not necessarily saying that. It's just saying that, look, when support is ended for this product, you need to stop using Windows XP. But Microsoft Security Essentials will continue to get updates to it itself, new virus definitions and this sort of thing. However, if you have a Windows XP machine, I didn't realize this, but I had it came in broken, and I uninstalled a number of things, including Microsoft Security Essentials. Then when I went to reinstall it, I couldn't. And so you cannot actually install Microsoft Security. If you already have it, you will get fresh definitions. If you want it, you cannot have it. So I'm actually curious. I imaged this machine. I'm wondering if I restore that image, if it would start working again. I'm assuming it would. But having uninstalled, I cannot reinstall it. So I'll probably just put a fast on it.
Yeah. I came across that too, but every time I saw it, maybe I read it wrong, but every time I saw it, it said, you know, this is not going to work anymore. And you go to update it and it says, nope, I'm not going to, it won't update on a Microsoft Security Essentials on a Windows XP machine that then started giving me that warning.
Okay. I know that on the one that I worked on, I have to log into it and check it again, but, unless I really, really misread this, it appeared to be getting new definitions. So.
Oh, yeah, mine did not. So
mine either. The one I worked on didn't.
I uninstalled it and just threw, like I said, Free Advanced on there as well.
I'll have to restore that image and see what happens. And that was the other thing, was that I had Windows XP machine. It's like Windows XP Home. I can't believe how much I worked on this. And then going back to it, I'm like, wow, I haven't worked on XP in a long time. And I'm like, oh, this thing is like clunky and awful, which makes me feel sad because I loved XP for so long. But anyway, this what it would do, it would boot up, you get the welcome screen, and when you would click, there were three user accounts, and when you would click the user account you want to log into, it would appear to do something, but then nothing would happen. So the mouse would move, but you couldn't click anything to actually do anything. You click, even if you wanted to click shutdown, you couldn't even shut it down or reboot it. So it would get stuck at that point. Now, it clearly wasn't frozen because the mouse would continue to move. It didn't even feel like locked up. It just felt like it couldn't overcome some hurdle that it needed to do to actually get to the desktop. It would boot successfully in a safe mode, but just not normally. So, long story short, very easy fix. I believe it tried to install an update or something, and it did not shut down successfully. Booting into safe mode, msconfig, I disabled everything except the most basic of services. All startup items I disabled, and I did put a check mark in the box for, it's like no GUI boot or something like that. And so as it's booting up, it actually will scroll all the drivers it's loading just like it's going to safe mode, but it's not. And then if it were to get stuck, you can maybe kind of figure out if it's a driver or something it's getting stuck on. However, having disabled unnecessary services and startup items, it did boot successfully the desktop. I'm like, oh, that's great, because I don't feel like learning how to fix something that's basically, I'll never need to know. I'll probably never need to go again on that.
Did you say it was XP, too?
XP Home.
Okay.
And so I don't know what it was. It doesn't matter. I booted into and I uninstalled a number of things that I think may have tried to update. I think it was an Adobe product. But I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So, that reminded me of going back to the computer with Vista that we kept just rebooting, is that I did try safe mode because there's probably somebody listening going, why didn't you try safe mode? I did try safe mode, and it would start scrolling through all the commands and then get to a certain spot and then reboot. I tried it safe mode with command prompt, so I could just manually change that file, scroll through everything, and then reboot. So it wouldn't even let me boot into safe mode at all. So I did try that and ended up having to do something like a Linux disk.
And you said you renamed the file.
Right, I renamed the pending.xml file.
And I did you try Sys Restore by any chance?
I could get to that. It wouldn't. There was no system. There was nothing.
Exactly right.
You didn't have it matched up.
Right. And I tried the going back to the last known good configuration. Nope. Nothing. It just nothing. So sad trombone sound when I did it manually, or I did, you know, when I had tried all that stuff.
So anyway, yeah, I tried what yours was. I tried Sys Restore and it was kind of the same thing where it made a difference. And I said, okay, right. So, but once again, this is something that probably would have been automatic in my mind several years ago, but now I'm like, no, I don't want to hear.
Yeah.
But can you just do your automatic startup fix like 7 does so successfully?
I know.
The difference is now I can wait 20 more minutes to know that I still have to figure out how to fix this.
Did you guys ever have to repair the bootloader?
Oh, yeah.
You know, the command line stuff.
Yeah, I tell them they just need to buy it.
But then you need the proper Windows disk to do that with, too. So.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Anyway. Okay. But those were a couple tasty little things that I did run into, and I want to throw those out. A couple are tasty things, but I'll save them.
Don't give all the tasty away.
No. I got to spread the tasty over time.
Well, real quick, like I was telling Tim, yes, I was telling Martin before you came in and before we went live, that my Core 2 Quad MSI laptop upstairs, it takes an awful time to boot up. We'll get to the desktop, but it just takes a long time for things to load up right, like the, you know, my wireless card. And so I saw a tutorial to restore my Explorer.exe, and I had to get it from my Windows 7 boot CD, and I had to extract it from, because the CD here, 64-bit, it's home. It's Ultimate to have upstairs. But this it has all the, you know, the different versions of Basic, Ultimate, whatever. But you have to use like WinZip to get to it. And anyway, it worked. And it did help. It did help up my speed up time. I mean, the desktop loads much quicker now.
Cool.
So somewhere or another, it was just, I don't know, corrupted or something.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. Well, this email comes from John Barbagello. I'm sorry, John, if I messed up. He had written this to us a couple weeks ago regarding antivirus, free versus paid, and Windows 8. Like he wrote a long email, and we talked about it. And it sounded like he was more opting for paid antivirus versus free antivirus. And we kind of said, or at least I know, remember me saying that that's not necessarily the case. That I've been very successful with free antivirus over paid. They both work the same. And so he wrote back in response to that. And he says, you guys rock with the best podcast and real world helpful info. I just want to let you know my previous email was more of a rant based on the podcast that Martin wasn't on late in March or early April. So it's all on you guys. That particular podcast seemed less informative and more opinionated than normal.
No, everything that I've ever said is a total fact. It's inarguable. it's literally set in stone somewhere. Whatever I say, I know that everybody agrees. They just need to rehear it.
He says,
if you're listening to me talk, it's opinion. I mean, half of it, it's made up on the spot. Half of it is a made up on the spot Tim fact.
Well, anyway. And you know, we all do things completely different than each other. So it's, yeah. He does say that the banter between everyone is entertaining, though. He says, I wasn't very clear. When I spoke of the paid-for products, I was talking about Avast Internet Security versus Avast Free and Malware Pro versus Malwarebytes Pro versus Malwarebytes Free, since both of these paid products seem to do a much better job in real-time protection versus cleaning up the mess afterwards. In my opinion, the paid-for products are worth it if you can get them for the right price. Shop around. And then he talks about prices for that. And then he goes on to talk about, and I won't read the rest of his email, because he does a really good job talking about Avast and how to set it up, and it'll be in the show notes. But he goes through step by step by step by step on how to install Avast and what kind of settings you should use to make it kind of optimized. So that's cool. And I do want to go back. I do want to say that things like the Malwarebytes free versus the Malwarebytes paid for version. So the Malwarebytes paid version is about $24.95 for a year now. They went to a yearly subscription. So the free version will work on your system. It just sits there. It doesn't do anything, and you can manually run the scan when you want to. The paid for version does some website monitoring. You can schedule out some scans, and it has kind of a real-time aspect where it'll watch and see what you're doing. So yes, in that aspect, the paid for version is going to be better than the free version. But you also have to take into consideration sometimes that I've noticed that I have the paid for version, is that sometimes the MAM, it's MAMBAM.exe, your computer's running slow all of a sudden. You have no idea what's going on. You look at that thing and that service has tapped out your system. And I don't know why. And I found that sometimes you just let it sit and it works. Sometimes you have to uninstall Malwarebytes and reinstall it. I don't know. But yes, in a general, is the paid-for version better than the free version? Yes, in my opinion, it is. I don't have the experience with Avast other than the fact that I've used it in a corporate setting. You know, so I guess most paid-for versions, you are going to run into more options to do that with. So am I going to have all my customers who just need an antivirus product pay for an antivirus product? I don't know. Depends on their budget. Depends on what they're running. Depends on, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into that. In a corporate environment, yes, I'm not running free antivirus in a corporate environment. Now, corporate being a good size environment, Microsoft Security Essentials does allow businesses with less than 10 computers to run their product for free. I'm asking those people to contact me when they have an issue. Now, I also have clients who have 50 computers, 150 computers. I'm not giving them free antivirus. They should not be using free antivirus, because when an issue happens, I need to be notified of when they're having issues. You know, most of our clients, when our single user clients, the free antivirus probably works fine for them. If they want to use the paid one, that's great. You know, I don't know what a single license for Avast costs though. So I can't, you know, it looks like, in this email, he said that a 10 user 3 year, Avast is $180, but that's 10 users. What's one cost? I don't know. And I'm not, John, and I'm not saying anything bad. I'm just throwing it out there. So
I can verify about Malwarebytes, the full version, which I have. And if you can get a copy of the full version, the old version, you're entitled to the updates after that. I'm sure some places still might have it. The version before 2.0. Which will upgrade to that, and it's only the one time, it's a lifetime thing. But now, if you would buy it now, you're going to have to do the yearly thing. But I tell you what, when I have, and that's another reason why that computer, my laptop is slow on getting to the desktop because of Malwarebytes, because it's doing stuff in the beginning. But I can go browsing, and it will block sites. I mean, it will block stuff that's trying to get in there. I mean, or trying to pop up stuff. It's unbelievable what it does. It really does a good job. I mean, it continually will block, you know, something will pop up saying block this site, block that site, or I could dismiss it. And it's amazing. Yeah. It's a really, I think it's a must have. I mean, I would suggest that to any person. I mean, any of your customers, buy it. It's worth $50 a year.
It is. And he, you know, I'm going through this email and looking at a lot of this stuff, and he does point out a lot of features that Avast Pro has that the free one doesn't. Sandboxing, safe zones, rootkit scannings. So really, Avast, I'm finding that the more I use it, the better I'm liking it. Everybody has their own, and I don't want to, you know, and I'm not interested in getting into, you know, my antivirus product is better than your antivirus product.
Well, I can tell you what the fact of the matter is, if you'd like.
Sure.
No, it's actually an opinion, but I was just going to say that I like the Avast, and I just said it that, you know, Security Essentials, if it's not an option, well, I mean, I go right to the Avast, because I think it's a very, very good product. I always have. I like Security Essentials because it's just easy. You press a button, go, and then that's it. I think it's almost like if you don't want options, then you don't I think you'd be overwhelmed by that. And so I like buttons. I like switches. I like options. So I really like the product, but I think it could be a little overwhelming for somebody to, if they got in there and start digging around. And I'm talking about my users, that, you know, grandma who just wants to play her solitaire and check her email. So, I took issue with a couple of things that he said in that first email. However, I very quickly dismissed them only because, I really thought that was a fantastic email he sent. I really appreciate the time that he sent and he spent on that because I remember you reading that, I had like, whatever, there were like 10 or 15 different things that he brought.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he had a real good on, what settings he uses.
Mm-hmm. So, and listening back when you read it on the last episode. So, I've never, I just call it as I see it. This is how what I feel is true based on what I've seen. However, I come here, I'm wouldn't listen to what anybody has seen because every opinion I have, it was probably a good 10 minutes ago, but technology moves so fast. We have to keep saying, well, I'm seeing this. Okay. Well, you're seeing that. And so maybe I've changed it up. You have to constantly just kind of stay on top of this. I'm always kind of amazed at how true some things have been over the long haul because this technology, man, if you don't stay on top of it, forget it. You get out of what we're doing. You get out of this for a year. Don't even come back because it's a whole, man. Everything is completely different. And so, I've never set myself up there. This is how you do it. This is no. I'm just saying. This is how I've always done it. Man, you got a better way. I want to know it because this is what I'm doing based upon my past history. But man, I'm always looking for the bigger, better, faster way to do something or stop doing something that doesn't work anymore.
And he does do. I mean, and I wrote him back and said, we may have issues where we disagree on, and that's great. That's that's what makes the world go round, but he has written phenomenal emails. He comes in this email, like I said, check us out in the show notes. He goes through Avast and he says, this is what he does after he installs it. And he goes by every single tab and he says, this is what you check on this tab. This is what you do in this tab. And he goes through step by step by step. And I mean, what I read was probably a quarter of the whole email. Everything else is just settings. So John, just my hat's off to you for writing this email into us and allowing us to share this with our listeners because somebody, including myself, is going to get, is going to benefit from this. And I'm probably going to go ahead and install Avast on the free Avast on another machine and go through these settings and test them out and look at them. So I know how to set them up both on a local level and an enterprise level because these settings will follow right on over. And I need as much help as I can get sometimes. So thank you, John, for sending in that email. It's greatly appreciated. Well, guys, you got anything else to go? Yeah.
Sure.
I'm going to go.
It's okay.
It was awesome.
I'm generally not a fan.
It's
better because you were here.
No.
Including the hosts.
As always, it's an honor to be here. And I thank you for working the schedule around for me and having an opportunity to stop in and to shoot the breeze a little bit. It's holiday weekend. It's Monday morning, and it's the first time I've looked forward to getting up early and doing something. And like, I don't want to sleep in. And this poor guy on the West Coast, I just think you're nuts. I would have been like sleeping in. So I really do appreciate it. And as always, it's just an honor to be with you guys. And happy belated birthday, Dor. I missed it. So
If anybody has missed it, please send Dor many emails and wish him happy birthday. Well, guys, I've had a great time. I'm gonna I got the day in front of me now. Who knows what I'm gonna do? The day is still young for me, but we'll see.
It's still young for
everybody. It's a different doing it in the morning, but we'll have it. Nonetheless, a great show. So, Tim, if we want to get a hold of you, what's the best way they can?
Hey, I'm Tim Bauermeister on G+, Men Like Tim in the Podnuts forums. You can email me. I am tim@realpcrepair.com.
Nice. And if people want to send us an email or a voicemail like John did, Mitch, what's the best way to do that?
Geisters@podnuts.com. You can reference any of us. And you can send us a voicemail, which we have not had in a long while. 7076-PODNUT. That's 7076-PODNUT. And let me know, guys, if anybody uses some of these prepaid phone services out there, let me know how you're you know, if you're satisfied with the service. Yeah,
keep the emails coming. We, you know, it's great to hear from you. It's great to hear from, I mean, even if you disagree with us, if you agree with us, great.
If you want to troll me, please, just send something. If it's happened before, I love it. Just, if you want to troll me, just,
you know, it's great. We enjoy bringing everything to the show, so. Thanks, guys. Martin Obando, you can reach me at martin@obandocomputing.com. You can mask kill in the forums, mask kill in the chat. Don't forget that we do have a chat. If you guys want to join us, generally we try to shoot for Tuesdays, 3:30 Pacific, 6:30 Eastern. You can go to podnuts.com/live. You can watch our beautiful shining faces. Okay. You can join in the chat. We do have a chance to talk back and forth sometimes, and sometimes we'll be talking about a subject and somebody will talk about it in the chat and we bring that to the show. And I mean, we do that quite often. Of course, thanks for all the listeners who come out and listen to us on a daily basis, and everybody who watches us live and supports Podnuts through podnuts.com/Amazon. So guys, have a great holiday weekend, the rest of it, and a great fiscal week. We'll see you next time. Bye, guys.
D72 is here. Go to foolishit.com for more information.